It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful, snowy downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 33 degrees. That snow is drifting down through a foggy mist. Out of the airport, they are now showing southerly winds at 8 miles per hour, and they are up to 1 1/4 mile of visibility. The Weather Service is predicting a damp day, rain and snow becoming all rain after 1 p.m. 30% chance of rain tonight. Then cloudy skies will gradually become partly cloudy overnight, low around 32 as west winds come in to blow the clouds away and make way for mostly sunny skies tomorrow. High near 40 tomorrow with west winds to 20, gusting to 30. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak's city manager is in his last month. Maybe. Our two federal senators disagree over the impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The leaders of the United States, Japan, and the Philippines meet this hour about fortifying their alliance against a common threat, China. They're expected to address the Chinese government's military expansion, territorial disputes, and expanding economic influence. From the South Korean capital, NPR's Anthony Kuhn is covering the White House talks.
President Biden and Japan's Prime Minister Fumio Kishida are expected to show support for President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and the Philippines in its face-off with China in the South China Sea. In recent months, Chinese Coast Guard ships have obstructed and rammed Philippine boats and hit them with water cannon. This is the first summit of the three nations. The U.S. hopes to construct a lattice or network of bilateral and multilateral agreements among Asian nations to help maintain its regional influence while curbing China's. Japan and the Philippines are also upgrading their own bilateral ties and are expected to sign an agreement this year, giving their armed forces access to each other's territories. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Seoul.
O.J. Simpson has died. His family posted a message on the social media platform X that Simpson passed away yesterday of cancer. He was 76. The former NFL star and broadcaster was one of the most celebrated sports figures of his time, elected to both the College and Pro Football Halls of Fame.
I'll never let you guys down, man. I'll live up to the honor of being in this hall and being on your team.
But his fame was overshadowed by what came to be known as the Trial of the Century. In 1994, Simpson was accused of killing his ex-wife, Nicole Brown, and her friend, Ronald Goldman. His criminal trial the following year highlighted issues surrounding domestic violence, celebrity, police corruption, and race. Many black Americans applauded when Simpson was acquitted, and many white Americans were stunned. A civil jury later found him liable for both killings. United Nations aid workers say they came under fire while waiting to cross through an Israeli checkpoint in central Gaza this week. NPR's Carrie Khan has more.
UNICEF spokeswoman Tessa Ingram says she was riding in a three-vehicle caravan on Tuesday that was struck by gunfire coming from the direction of an Israeli checkpoint.
This is not something that should happen at any point to a UN convoy, but let alone one that's on a coordinated mission at a designated holding point where we were asked and authorized to wait.
She says none of the aid workers were injured, but workers continue to face dangers despite assurances of improved safety by Israel after 7 World Center kitchen employees were killed by an Israeli airstrike. Israel says they were mistakenly targeted. UNICEF says Israeli military have not responded to its inquiries. Military officials did not immediately respond to an NPR request. Carrie Khan, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The Dow is up slightly at 38,459. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak's city manager will resign from his full-time position at the end of this month, after 7 years on the job. City manager Mike Tvenge says he is willing to sign a contract as the interim city manager starting in May. A sticking point to that contract being finalized is figuring out how much Tvenge will be paid. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports.
One of the items on the agenda for the upcoming council meeting on Thursday is an amendment to the city manager's employment agreement. The document states if it is signed and approved, Mike Tvenge will become the interim city manager starting May 1st with a new base salary of over $300,000. If approved, that would be a 66% pay increase for Tvenge despite the interim role.
I do find it problematic, especially because this new salary is, I think, a 60% increase in salary.
That's Kodiak resident Aileen Fitzgerald, who voiced her concerns during a hiring committee meeting last week. During a work session Tuesday night, Councilmember Bob Stanford also voiced concerns over how this proposed interim contract would affect the budget for recruiting and hiring a new full-time city manager.
Our full-time equivalent, right, our FTE for across the board to all our city employees is normally double of what the salary is, right? So I know that, you know, insurance is already a part of this process, but we don't have those monies.
Currently, the Kodiak City Manager job posting lists the starting salary at $175,000 annually. Mayor Pat Branson, who sits on the hiring committee, also pointed out that several other city manager jobs are open in Alaska. She says Kodiak has to be competitive.
If you go back and read some of the city manager reports, you can see what's being done at the city level. I think that's really important for people to read. It's incredible the amount of work that goes into that. It is a professional position. And there are, I don't know, four or five, maybe more communities competing right now for city managers across the state.
A potential justification for Tvenge's possible salary increase was his latest annual performance review, which is cited in city documents as a favorable one. But according to Councilmember John Whitten, the proposed salary increase to more than $300,000 was brought forward by Tvenge. Whitten is not sure how that number was arrived at and notes that it took the council by surprise. Tvenge is currently out of town, and Mayor Branson says she plans for the hiring committee to meet with him after April 18th when he returns. In the meantime, council members agreed to postpone voting on the city manager's employment agreement. The document will, however, still be listed on Thursday's meeting agenda. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
And a quick correction, the companion article to this story previously stated that the last performance review for the city manager took place in 2023, but actually took place in 2021. KMXT has updated the article to reflect that information and regrets the error. A partisan brawl about to erupt in Congress over the impeachment of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas seemingly has Alaska's two U.S. senators split. Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin has more.
Republicans in the U.S. House plan to deliver the articles of impeachment to the Senate on Monday. A question about it drew a weary sigh from Senator Lisa Murkowski.
I was just wondering about your thoughts about the Mayorkas impeachment.
Murkowski explained that when the Senate takes delivery of an impeachment, senators have to focus on that and start a trial. That, she says, blocks progress on all the other business of governing the country, like passing budget bills and national security legislation.
I am more than a little bit frustrated that we're going to be taking up an impeachment process that most everybody understands is really nothing more than a messaging effort.
The message is actually one that Murkowski agrees with, that the Biden administration has mishandled the border crisis, or as she put it, failed miserably. The House impeachment accuses Mayorkas of refusing to comply with the law and breaching the public trust. Defenders of Mayorkas and some constitutional scholars say this is a policy dispute, not an impeachable offense. Murkowski says the job of the Senate would be to decide if Mayorkas' actions amount to high crimes and misdemeanors.
And I don't see that. And I don't know that even if we were given the benefit of a full trial, we would ever get to that. And so in the meantime, We're going to be going through an exercise that I am just not convinced is going to result in anything other than an opportunity to beat up on the administration's immigration policies.
Senator Dan Sullivan, on the other hand, says, bring it on. In a tweet posted on X, Sullivan urged Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer to follow precedent and hold a full trial for Mayorkas. Sullivan says it's about providing the American people with transparency and accountability. A Senate trial would start early next week, if there is one. Democrats are hoping to ditch the impeachment quickly, maybe with a motion to table or to dismiss. Murkowski says she doesn't know how she'd vote.
I don't know what the motion's going to be yet. I don't think that anyone has defined that.
A large majority of Americans view immigration as a crisis or a major problem, and electoral politics are at stake. Democratic senators in tight races are under pressure to convict Mayorkas or risk political ads portraying them as weak on the border. Meanwhile, some of the Senate's more conservative Republicans are talking about the issue in the harshest terms. Here's Texas Senator Ted Cruz.
We're witnessing a profound threat to our nation at the southern border. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and this entire administration is deliberately and willfully facilitated the criminal invasion of this country.
Several studies of crime statistics have found that undocumented migrants commit crimes at lower rates than native-born citizens. Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola voted against the impeachment in February, as did all House Democrats. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks has received a $20 million National Science Foundation grant to research climate change effects on marine species in the Gulf of Alaska and the communities which depend on them. NSF Director Seth Aroman Ponchanathan announced the Research Infrastructure Improvement Award at UAF yesterday, saying it aims to help answer key climate questions.
How do you mitigate? How do you adapt? How do you build resilient futures through science and technology?
According to an NSF release, UAF scientists will work with counterparts at UAA and UAS to conduct community-engaged research. Ponchanathan emphasized the grant's focus on local knowledge and diversity.
In terms of engaging with the community, which is the most important thing, because it's important to have everybody involved and the community-based solutions.
Ponchanathan says, the new program called Interface for Change is the sixth five-year NSF-funded project under the university's established program to stimulate competitive research, or EPSCoR. Alaska's lone member of the U.S. House of Representatives says her chief concern is the economy and how her constituents are faring in it. She sat down with KRBD's Michael Finelli to discuss some of the pressing issues facing Alaskans now.
First off, I want to ask about housing, a shared concern across Alaska, but especially here in Ketchikan. Prices have been soaring in recent years. I recently moved here. It is very difficult to find. There's very few rentals on the market at any price, let alone an affordable price. So I'm just curious what can be done at a federal level to help both housing affordability and availability in Alaska.
Well, I think that across Alaska, I don't think there's a community that is an exception to very, very limited rentals, very limited market for buying homes. And we are very aware of how overcrowded homes are, how hard it is to find a place, how expensive, like you say. And this isn't unique to Alaska, but I think it's exacerbated in Alaska. And I have been working hard with folks at the Anchorage municipal level, letting them know that we can no longer at the federal level or state level expect municipalities to shoulder this burden alone. We've got very, very high commodities right now. All of the commodities to build a home have really skyrocketed in price. Mm-hmm. The freight costs are much higher now. But there are programs at the federal level that I think that we need to revisit Chief among them is NAHASDA, and that is a housing program for Native people. Most communities in Alaska qualify for NAHASDA housing and have a regional housing authority in each region that shepherds that money in those projects. That has been underfunded, and it has not been reauthorized for a very long time. So that is a priority for me. I think VA, the Veterans Administration, could be doing a much better job working with veterans to make sure that vets have housing. There are young people such as yourself who really need single-unit homes or smaller homes, smaller apartments, smaller options, more affordable options. But this is just something that everybody is feeling very acutely right now.
Yeah, yeah. Opioids and other substance use addictions are a big problem here, as they are throughout Alaska and the country. And a crucial part of addressing that, obviously, is having health care and mental health care resources. And I know that federal dollars exist to support that. What is holding us up from receiving more federal support for mental health?
That is a good question, and that is not something I've focused on, and not that it's not important. It is very important. I think across Alaska, we are short on providers, both for physical health and mental health. So one of the positions, we're a very small staff, but we are continuing to staff up. One of the positions that we are creating, because of the huge kind of generational funding packages that have come out of the 117th Congress, we have hired a grants coordinator to help communities, to help different interest groups look for and successfully achieve many of the federal grants that are out there. I think that most Alaskans know that grants are not very easy to compete for.
Yeah.
You have to know a lot of the magic words. So we are very pleased to report that we have a new person in that position who's well-trained, well-qualified to do that work.
So I want to talk about climate. You mentioned in that legislative speech, you talked about houses sinking into the permafrost. There are entire villages in western Alaska that need to be relocated because of erosion. Here in southeast, we just saw a devastating landslide in Wrangell. And scientists are saying that landslides are becoming more common because of climate change. So I'm curious what you are working on, what can be done to slow down the effects of climate change.
Well, I think everyone is leaning into renewables, both in terms of it being a renewables providing a cheaper form of energy for households, but also to reduce our larger carbon footprint. And as far as Alaskans are concerned, this will ultimately benefit us because we won't be barging back in refined oil at very top dollar. And everyone, like you say, can see impacts within their own lifetime of weather changes. Our shoulder seasons of spring and fall are much longer, and we had 5 snowless winters a few years back. That was very concerning. I think it had big impacts on things like salmon fry. I know it had impacts on ptarmigan. So this is a very real issue for Alaskans. Fishermen, we can see that in our lifetime, fish abundance has gone way down, and certainly a contributor to that has to be the climate. Chinook salmon are on the downtrend across the state. There isn't a river that has abundant Chinook returns at this point. Reds are doing fantastic because reds do well when there's a 1 or 2 degree temperature increase. So there are definitely signs that need to be taken seriously, and we are working on that. It is very important to me that we meet these goals of making sure we're not raising our global temperature by too many degrees.
Yeah, so you recognize all of these problems, right? And so I guess what I struggle to wrap my head around is, I think, something a lot of Alaskans wrestle with. We live in this place that is full of so many wonderful natural resources. And at the same time, we are fiscally reliant on oil extraction, right? Which is destroying those natural resources. So I'm curious how you reconcile those two things.
So having served in the state legislature for 10 years, I'm very acutely aware of where our money comes from and the obligations the state has to fund education, public safety, and transportation. And around 80% of the budget that the state has comes from oil taxes. And we've seen that we've been in an economic slump for at least 11 years. Getting the Willow Project approved and moving has already infused $2 billion into the Alaskan economy. And as Alaska's sole congressman, it really is my job to care deeply about the economy. I think it is Congress's job to care about the economy and how people are doing. Everybody needs a good paying job. Everybody's got to put beans on the table. And in Alaska, the economic engine has been resource extraction. And we have not, in a fast enough way, come up with an alternative to this. And I think we're all leaning into it. But one of the obstacles is a very cumbersome permitting process. It takes about 10 years for anything to be permitted in Alaska, whether that's a renewable project or a petroleum project. That is too long. I think that's unreasonable to expect that there are going to be investors who can float a project through permitting for 10 years. But we've got to have a system, if we're really going to transition, if we're really, you know, onto renewables, if we're really going to transition away from petroleum, we have to do so much more than we're doing. We don't even have the workforce that we need to put in these new power systems and transmission lines and then maintain them. That's actually the number one obstacle that we're facing right now.
That was U.S. Representative Mary Peltola talking with KRBD's Michael Finelli. State transportation officials have been studying how two of South Central Alaska's major highways should connect in Anchorage in the decades to come. Concepts for the new high-speed highway connections are getting the most attention. But as Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports, there are hints of consensus forming around far less expensive options that could change how everyone gets in, out, and around the city of Anchorage.
Right now, a pair of four-lane, one-way streets slice through Anchorage's Fairview neighborhood to connect the Seward and Glen highways. Or, as Assembly Vice Chair Meg Zalatel put it recently,
this, you know, giant monstrosity that cuts through the heart of Anchorage.
Tens of thousands of vehicles zoom by every day on what used to be two neighborhood roads. Transportation officials repurposed them as high-volume highway connectors after the 1964 Good Friday earthquake, physically dividing Fairview, causing disinvestment, and creating dangerous conditions for pedestrians and cyclists. Now, the State Department of Transportation and its consultants are working through a study that began in 2021 to come up with potential fixes. They published a preliminary list of project options in February and are now refining those options based on public input. They all have different impacts on traffic patterns, quality of life, homes, businesses, parks, and even Merrill Field. Their flashiest idea calls for building a new highway bypass through the Airport Heights neighborhood with an elevated viaduct over parkland, or rebuilding the connection in place in Fairview as a more traditional high-speed highway, but below street level, with new crosstown connections for local traffic on top. Aaron Yonganalen is head of AMATS, the area's Metropolitan Transportation Planning Organization. He says there seems to be too much focus on building expensive new infrastructure and not enough on improving local connections.
As a transportation planner, it's our responsibility as in AMATS to say whether or not alternatives that are brought forward can be paid for. And no, I'll say it right now, we can't afford this stuff.
He was speaking to the Anchorage Assembly last month at a meeting where state transportation officials and their consultants walked through the concepts. Federal money could help with the upfront costs, but Yonganalen says that's just part of the issue.
Maintenance is a huge concern, because when you accept federal dollars, you have to be able to show that you're going to be able to maintain the systems. We can't maintain our systems now, both in pavement and winter maintenance. It's a struggle for all of the agencies. And when you look at these alternatives here, it looks like a massive amount of pavement is being added, because it's not just the highway, it's all the other stuff you have to do in addition to it.
Formal cost estimates for different alternatives haven't been developed yet as part of the state's study, but old estimates from past highway connection studies put the more ambitious solutions in the hundreds of millions of dollars. AMATS's long-term plan for the problematic highway connection is much simpler. Redesign the existing roads as what are known as complete streets. That is, with non-motorized users in mind instead of as an afterthought. That would likely mean fewer vehicle lanes, lower speed limits, safer sidewalks, better crosswalks, and bike-friendly improvements. The AMATS estimate for that is about $75 million. That is on the table in the ongoing state study, both as a standalone solution and to complement the flashier ones. Several assembly members indicated they are interested. Lindsay Hyduke is with the nonprofit NeighborWorks, which is partnered with the Fairview Community Council looking for solutions to repair damage to the community caused by the existing highway connection. She says she's still hopeful there will be consensus.
But we do have major concerns about some of these options and are really trying to find that place of what can we say yes to, what can we really promote and push. And when we hear the department say, is a highway needed, and if so, where?
That's the overarching question the state's study intends to answer.
It's that is a highway needed piece that we're still really pushing on.
The project team plans to hold another workshop, open house, and public comment period this summer, all leading up to the team's formal recommendation in October. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
It's corporate earnings season, and there's positive news from some of the first notable reports. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. Delta Airlines reported strong sales during the first 3 months of the year and a small profit of $37 million. Delta said it's already seeing healthy demand for summer travel. Constellation Brands, owner of Corona and Modelo, among others, experienced strong demand for beer. Quarterly profits were nearly $400 million, beating Wall Street expectations. But CarMax struggled amid high vehicle prices and higher interest rates. Quarterly profits were down 28%. Several big banks report earnings tomorrow. Initial jobless claims fell again last week, down to 211,000. Continuing claims rose slightly, but are still around 1.8 million. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by KeyBank. Learn more at key.com/trendingtopics.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 11th day of April, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 7:08. It will set again at 9:14. That will give us 14 hours and 6 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 55 degrees, set in 1948, and our record low was 15, set in 2013. Currently 33 degrees. It has been steadily snowing. It's starting to look a little wetter. It's also been foggy and misty, and out at the airport they continue to have 1.25 miles of visibility. They also are showing southerly winds at 8 miles per hour. The Weather Service is calling for rain and snow to become all rain after about 2 p.m., high near 42, south winds to 15, gusting to 25. For tonight, a 30% chance of rain before 8, but then the cloudy skies will gradually become partly cloudy, low of 32 as these west winds move in to 15, gusting as high as 20. And they are expected to blow the clouds away tomorrow, mostly sunny tomorrow, high near 40, west winds at 20, gusting to 30. And the Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies on Saturday, completely sunny skies on Sunday and Monday, partly sunny on Tuesday. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will happen at 5:05 p.m. and be 7.5 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:27 p.m. of 1.6 feet. However, those big low tides in the morning continue, and tomorrow morning at 11:27 here on the east side, there will be a minus 1.2-foot tide. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:25 p.m. and be 13.1 feet in Larson Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:09 p.m. of 2.3 feet, and your very low tide tomorrow morning will be at 11:55, 5 minutes to noon, and be minus 2 feet in Larson Bay. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through tomorrow. South wind to 30 knots, becoming southwest 25 tonight and southwest 30 tomorrow. 7-foot seas building to 8 feet tonight and to 9 feet tomorrow on our west side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through Friday there as well. South winds to 25 knots, becoming southwest 30 tonight and turning to the west to 30 knots tomorrow. 6-foot seas today, building to 10 feet tonight and remaining at 10 feet tomorrow in the Shelikof. Just outside of the city here in Chiniak Bay, small craft advisory today with south winds to 25 knots and seas to 3 feet. For tonight, southwest 10, increasing to 15 after midnight with 2-foot seas. And for tomorrow in Chiniak Bay, west winds to 20 knots and seas to 3 feet. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And on Monday, the Health Facilities Advisory Board will be having their regular meeting. That's happening at the Providence Barometer Conference Room at 3 p.m. on Monday.
Ang Kodiak Area Native Association ay nasasabik na ipahayag ang pagbabalik ng misyon ng Arctic Care ngayong Mayo. Nakipagsosyo ang Kana sa militar ng Estados Unidos upang magbigay ng libreng serbisyong pangkalusugan sa komunidad ng Kodiak at sa mga nakapaligid na nayon. Magsisimula ang mga serbisyo sa klinika simula kasyam hanggang ika-20 ng Mayo sa Daniel Lee Harmon Kodiak Readiness Center at sa Kodiak College. Walang mga espesyal na kinakailangan para ma-access ang serbisyo ng Arctic Care. Ang mga detalyeng tungkol sa mga espesipikong serbisyo at kung paano makakapagparehistro ay ilalabas sa lalong madaling panahon upang manatiling updated sa mga balita ng Arctic Care. Mangyaring bisitahin ang kodiakhealthcare.org or sundan ang Facebook ng Kodiak Area Native Association.
Notice is hereby given. There will be a Board of Education regular meeting on Monday, April 15th, beginning at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is number F140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be live streamed, and login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website. Look under the Board of Education tab. For more information, contact the Secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. Well, lots of things going on at Comfish include the sourdough pancake breakfast. That's happening on Saturday. Elks Lodge, 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday, the pancake breakfast. Ticket proceeds will benefit youth and community projects, and they may be purchased at the door. Adults, $10, children, $5. That's Saturday starting at 9 a.m. Delicious sourdough pancakes, and I understand they will be having bacon and sausage as well, and lots of good orange juice. Things happening today at the Comfish Alaska over at the Kodiak Marketplace include the afternoon forums. At 1 p.m. will be What's Next for Bristol Bay with Nels Ure. 2 p.m. will be the Alaska Seafood Update and International Marketing Update with Greg Smith and Sam Friedman. And at 3 p.m., the Project Gabe for Commercial Fishermen and Women will be having their presentation. All those are over at the Harbor Room in the Best Western rather than where the rest of the convention is going on at the Kodiak Marketplace. But everything at the Marketplace sure looks great. Those booths are all over the place. They have all kinds of great things to look at and all kinds of interesting people to talk to. So be sure and visit Comfish Alaska this afternoon.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.